It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 64, the podcast that brings you news, views, and culture from all over the world, looking at it from a Christian perspective. And this week, we're going to go to Ethiopia, Syria, Turkey, Poland, America, the UK, China, Australia, Japan, and Africa. So we better crack on with it. But first of all, let me just give a brief shout out to all those who are listening in Malaysia, because for some reason, there were an awful lot of you last week. Well, whether you're Malay or Malay Chinese, we are delighted to have you on board. And please do send us news from your part of the world. But let's begin with a really good news story.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2019 to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali for his efforts to achieve peace and international cooperation, and in particular for his decisive initiative to resolve the border conflict with neighboring Eritrea.
Now, this was a shock. Why was this a shock? Most people will not have heard of Abiy Ahmed Ali. What a great name. But people were expecting all the prize money, if you like, the gambling money, was on Greta Thunberg being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, but she wasn't. Instead, they awarded Abiy Ahmed Ali, who is the Prime Minister of Ethiopia. And here is the amazing thing. Not many people reported this, but he is an evangelical. He's a member of the Pentecostalist Church. He was born a Muslim, but he's part of a growing story in Ethiopia of a number of people who have become Christians. And there is, of course, the Ethiopian Coptic Church, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, and the growing number of evangelicals, reckoned to be now about 25% of the population. And here's the amazing thing. It is making a difference. The church is called the Ethiopian Evangelical Church Mekane Jesus, Place of Jesus. It has 9 million members, which makes it probably the largest Lutheran church in the world, because it is evangelical Lutheran. Why did he win that peace prize? Because he's resolved Ethiopia's 20-year war with Eritrea, which has killed over 80,000 people. He has brought peace into that region, and he really deserves it.
We automatically lifted state of emergency. That was one of the questions of the public. And released thousands of prisoners, including journalists. Today, we don't have a single journalist in prison, and we are proud of that.
That's also rare these days, huh?
If you are open-minded and open-hearted, you can learn. It's not bad sometimes to learn from Africa as well.
Anyways, I think this is a wonderful story. I think it is a remarkable story. So following on Scott Morrison here in Australia, the Pentecostal Prime Minister of Australia, we now have, and I believe Bolsonaro of Brazil is the same, and we now have an evangelical Lutheran as the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, and being recognized in this way. That is good news. That's surely good news. But not such good news is what's coming out of Syria, which for many years has been a source of so much discontent and trouble. Listen to President Trump justifying his signal to the Turks that it was okay for them to invade northern Syria and take on the Kurds.
And I say, why are we protecting Syria's land? Assad's not a friend of ours. Why are we protecting their land? And Syria also has a relationship with the Kurds, who, by the way, are no angels, okay? Who is an angel? There aren't too many around. But Syria has a relationship with the Kurds, so they'll come in for their border. The thing that's common is that everybody hates ISIS. Now, the PKK, which is a part of the Kurds, as you know, is probably worse at terror and more of a terrorist threat in many ways than ISIS. So it's a very semi-complicated, not too complicated if you're smart, but it's a semi-complicated problem. And I think it's a problem that we have very nicely under control. We have two countries, one
now,
in the land.
Why are we so upset about this? I am really upset about this for lots and lots of different reasons. First of all, Trump did give a signal. Whatever anyone else says, when American troops are withdrawn, it was saying to Erdogan, you go ahead and do what you want to do. And Erdogan wants to go into northern Syria, not to deal with Assad, but to deal with the Kurds. And why is that important? Well, President Trump justifies his actions by saying, and this, I think the ignorance of this is astounding. He says, the Kurds didn't help us at D-Day in Normandy. The Kurds weren't a nation then. They're from the Middle East. Aside from which, the Turks were neutral right until the very end of the war when they could see who was winning. And it is a level of spectacular ignorance that he can argue in that way. But even worse is the callousness. Why? Because the Kurds have been the most effective fighters against ISIS. They have been the primary reason that America did not have to put a significant number of troops on the ground to deal with ISIS. They have been the primary reason that ISIS have been defeated. And now that ISIS have been defeated, what, in effect, President Trump is saying, we're out of here. We'll leave you to the mercy of the Turks. It is a betrayal. And many Republicans within his own party recognize that. It is an absolute betrayal. It is cynical and it is cruel and it is wrong. And for the president to say that the Kurds are no angels is, again, you can justify anything by saying that. And the implications of this are seen in different ways. So, for example, Hevrin Khalif, who is a female politician who worked to unite Christians, Arabs and Kurds in Syria, she was amongst nine individuals killed by a Turkish group. They were just taken out and shot. I do think that President Trump and America has blood on its hands yet again. And it is cringeworthily, embarrassingly bad. Okay, let's come on to Poland. And again, a story that has gone vastly underreported.
In Catholic Poland, this social conservatism built around the family has proved popular. It has pushed back against issues like gay rights and has resisted EU initiatives to share the burden of migration. A booming economy has allowed a generous welfare policy, including the 500 Plus scheme, which awards $126 a month per child to every family.
People here are older and appreciate the fact the current government supports the family, and we like the fact this government speaks for the family.
The policy costs a lot, but
what often gets reported on the BBC and others is how LGBT groups in Poland are fighting, or the EU wants the Poles to go back on their judges' reform and so on. But these things don't get reported. The Law and Justice Party seems to have won in the latest election the highest percentage of votes since democracy was restored in 1989. The party will end up with a slightly increased majority. It has a strong socially conservative program, including being against abortion. It has a reputation as being a party that delivers on its promises, and that's pretty rare in Western politics nowadays. I think this is actually quite a remarkable result in different ways, and one that for some reason seems to have gone largely unnoticed. What hasn't gone unnoticed is International Pronouns Day. What is that? You know, I was thinking about this, and let me just tell you this, please do not think out loud. I was in a public toilet in a cubicle. I didn't think there was anyone else there. And I was just thinking about this, and I said the words out loud. I heard myself saying them, International Pronouns Day. And when I stepped out, there was a gentleman standing at the wash basin who just looked at me as though I was completely mad. Well, I'm not surprised, because it is completely mad. But listen to this from Cheshire Police.
Today is International Pronouns Day, which is a day particularly important to people who identify as transgender or gender non-conforming. Being misgendered can have a huge impact on somebody and their personal well-being. It also can be used as a form of abuse for somebody, and that just isn't right. Today is about raising awareness, getting people to have conversations, and understanding why it is so important to understand the pronouns that somebody wishes to be used for them. Have a good day.
Now, let's just say something about Cheshire Police. You think, what is the purpose of the police? What are they doing? Are they there to prevent crime? Are they there to arrest criminals? There were 30,000 violent crimes in the year to August 2019 in Cheshire. The monthly rate of violent crime is up by more than 50%. But the police seem to have resources and want to devote energy to making misgendering, in other words, calling someone a pronoun that they don't want to be called, a crime. So a man says that he's a woman, and if I'm not willing to acknowledge him as a woman, which he isn't, because he's not a woman, he is a man. He's a man who wants to be a woman. He's a man who'd like to be identified as a woman. But I should not be compelled to tell lies by the police. I mean, this Julie Cook policewoman says it's so important to understand the pronoun that somebody wishes to be used for them. Well, are you going to make it a hate crime for people to miscall me as a Christian? Can I ask that every time they use the word Christian, they call me beloved or beloved in Christ? Calling people a Christian, calling people a Bible basher can be a form of abuse. Are the police going to investigate that? I pretty well get hate mail every single day. Can I refer that to the police? I don't want to refer it to the police. I think people have a right to insult me. They have people a right to say what they want. I have a right to ignore them. But this turn within the police in the United Kingdom and elsewhere is a profoundly disturbing one. A senior officer has used police resources to issue a public statement telling the public to respect the pronouns of others, meaning that the police now regard misgendering as a criminal offence. Well, and Piers Morgan, he had to have a debate. At least there are apparently thousands of people who've called a petition for him to be removed from his Good Morning Britain show because apparently of his attitude towards transgender. And then there's the insanity of Flora. I read this tweet. The companies we shop with care what their customers think. Following concerns raised by trans right campaigners, Flora's parent company Upfield say that they've ended their partnership with Mumsnet. So Mumsnet, one of the largest websites and social groups, has apparently been deemed to be transphobic, and so Flora have withdrawn their sponsorship. Well, do you know what, Flora? You've lost a customer here. I'm not going to buy your stuff. I think this kind of, you know, you've got the police and you've got the corporations. Okay, a lot of this comes down to intolerance. Let's listen to this from Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke.
Do you think religious institutions like colleges, churches, charities, should they lose their tax-exempt status if they oppose same-sex marriage?
Yes.
And that really is a wow moment. Why is it a wow moment? Because we were told that, what do you care about same-sex marriage? Just let people get on, let people do whatever they want. It's not going to affect you. And now we have a candidate for the presidency of the United States saying that if you don't agree with same-sex marriage, you will be penalized financially by the state. It was always going to go this way. And yet when we do the slippery slope argument, people say, no, 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 that's not going to happen. But it does happen. And here's another example of something that's being applauded. I was drawn to it by the Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, who retweeted it and said, isn't this brilliant? And you know, applauded Elizabeth Warren making this statement.
Let's say you're on the campaign trail and you're approached.
You have been, yes. Uh-huh.
And a supporter approaches you and says, Senator, I'm old-fashioned and my faith teaches me that marriage is between one man and one woman. What is your response?
Well, I'm going to assume it's a guy who said that. And I'm going to say, then just marry one woman. I'm cool with that. Assuming you can find one.
Okay. Let me ask you a follow-up. Why is this considered brilliant? There are at least three things wrong with it. First of all, it's sexist. I assume it's a guy. Why? There are lots of women who are opposed to same-sex marriage. Secondly, it's irrational. If you don't want a same-sex partner, don't have one. Marry a woman. Sure. But that kind of argument can be used logically in different ways. You're against slavery? Don't have one. You don't want to marry a child? Don't marry one. You don't want to have more than one wife? Don't have one. You could use that argument to justify all of these things. As a logical argument, people laugh and sneer and go, oh, what a brilliant point. It's not a brilliant point. Now, I know immediately people say, well, you're comparing same-sex marriage with paedophilia or polygamy or whatever. And the answer is, no, I'm not. What I'm doing is using the logic of Elizabeth Warren insofar as it exists. But also, what many people missed is the sneering mockery which assumes that if you disagree with me on same-sex marriage, you are a repulsive individual, assuming you can find a wife. That is the level of public discourse. People applaud and cheer such cheap, snide, irrational, crude comments. Okay, let's just say a brief word about Hong Kong. The situation there continues to be ongoing. The protests are continuing. The army hasn't invaded as yet. Carrie Lam finds herself not being able to deliver her speech in the Hong Kong Parliament. And for me, the most interesting and disturbing fact of the day, it's back to the corporations. Apple have withdrawn a map, which the Chinese government said could be used by the protesters. So here again, we have a large authoritarian government dictating to a large capitalist corporation and the corporation going along with it. And then thanks for all the feedback from last week about the climate change stuff. And again, note that we're not talking about climate change so much as the hypocrisy of the people involved. Just a couple of things. Gail Bradbrook, one of the founders of Extinction Rebellion, has climbed onto a civil service roof and tried to smash one of the windows. The police are beginning to take action against this, and politicians like Caroline Lucas are saying, you're preventing our freedom to demonstrate. No, people are not being prevented the freedom to demonstrate. They're being prevented from the freedom to disrupt and to destroy, which is what's happening. But I think the one that struck me most was the hypocrisy. Now listen to this from a BA advert.
Yorkshire pudding.
Beds.
Discoveries.
UK garage.
Cake. Rather.
Ideas.
Honey. Love.
Hope. And rather a lot of tea.
We love you, Britain. You make us who we are.
That is, in the course of that, you heard Olivia Colman. Now, why am I mentioning her? Well, Olivia Colman joined Extinction Rebellion and was part of the protest in Trafalgar Square. And again, why is that significant? Because she's appearing in an advert for British Airways and then joins a rebellion which is demanding that people don't fly. It's hypocrisy. And that hypocrisy is seen in people like Lewis Hamilton, who says we have to go vegan in order to save the planet. But Lewis Hamilton is a racing driver using the most gas-guzzling cars in the world. And he's saying we have to go vegan to save the planet. Well, maybe we have to stop racing cars to save the planet. You think of all the hypocrisy that is involved in these things. Remember when Prince Harry gave a barefoot talk at the Google Climate Change Summit in Sicily, which he went to by private jet and helicopter? The Italian press said that there were 114 jets that went for it. Super yachts were docked nearby. It's the filthy rich talking about how to stop poorer people traveling. It's the hypocrisy that is breathtaking. Like Benedict Cumberbatch, who again went to the protest in Trafalgar Square, and yet he's the guy who's advertising cars in India. So what can we say? I mean, the most astounding thing in all of this is that there's 100 celebrities, including Jude Law, Tom York, Mel B, Benedict Cumberbatch. They signed an open letter to the media saying, you're right to call us hypocrites. Can you imagine this? This is what they're saying. You're right to call us hypocrites, but the stories that you write calling us climate hypocrites will not silence us. No, but it invalidates what you're saying. Can you understand that? It's like Christianity. The worst advert for Christianity are Christian hypocrites. Okay, let's move on to something else. I heard a wonderful talk by an Australian actress from Melbourne called Anna McGachan. And I do suggest that you read her book, and I suggest you look at this particular clip. But here's part of it anyway.
I now say no to nudity for many, many reasons. One of those reasons is sort of an ongoing conversation between me and Jesus about it, just about my own body, about my own purity. But one of the other reasons is the thought that I could be perpetuating a culture that encouraged young men in particular to view women in that way, to encourage the pornography culture, you know, because these images, even though I was in character serving a production, serving a story that I actually think was an incredible production, the screen captures of, you know, my character in, you know, sexually vulnerable positions or whatnot would appear on pornographic websites. And that rocked me, because it's so destructive. It's so destructive to our hearts and to how we see and relate to one another. And so I actively want to encourage the positive, enriching, holistic understanding of who women are.
And notice what she's saying about how nudity can be misused and can be destructive. Well, she really is quite a remarkable lady. And you know how she became a Christian? By reading a Gideon Bible. She's a lesbian activist who became a Christian by reading a Gideon Bible in a hotel. Just an incredible story. But speaking of misuse of things, let's think of Christian misuse of the internet. Listen to this for a moment.
Anything new?
It's a pump.
Can you fix it?
Maybe. Mr. Kachigunda, when you turn the wheel on your bike, the light shines. How?
It's magnets.
I can bring water. I know how to do it.
That's the story of the young man, the boy who harnessed the wind. It was a film that was made. But for some reason, over the past few days, numerous Christians I've seen who on social media are retweeting a meme which says, make this boy famous because the mainstream media won't. But the mainstream media did. The BBC were part of this. They made the film of this boy. It's been out on Netflix. Now, what this does is it makes Christians look stupid because we're criticizing something that clearly we don't know. But it's also wrong. We're just passing on gossip. And I think what we all need to do is we need to check our sources. For example, when I'm trying to do things for this podcast, I do try and check two or three sources. Now, sometimes you're not able to, but we should try to. Okay, coming towards the end, the top 20 books you have lied about. I thought this was a fascinating article in The Independent. I've actually read 14. What they were trying to say was that these are the top 20 books that people lie about having read. Well, I've read 14 of them, and that's not a lie. I think there's a couple I think I may have read, but I'm not sure. But I have read War and Peace and Pride and Prejudice and Romeo and Juliet. The one I'm not sure about is Ulysses. I can't remember reading it. I thought I had, but who knows? I know what it's about because I've read synopsis of it and so on. The one that gets me most, though, is the Bible. People who are saying they've read the Bible and they haven't. I hope that's not Christians. Maybe one other story. Congratulations to Japan in the Rugby World Cup for defeating Scotland 28-21. Scotland played well, but typical Scotland, glorious defeats are what we specialise in. But what a joy for the Japanese. And what a great thing to have an Asian team in the Rugby World Cup finals for the first time.
Tanaka has it. The countdown is on. It's there for Japan. The victory is there. And the emotion pours down from the stands here in Yokohama. Pandemonium.
I'm going to leave you with a clip of an Ethiopian gospel song, just going back to the first story, and also a quote from Sadio Mane, the African Liverpool player, when he says this about his lifestyle. Why would I want 10 Ferraris, 20 diamond watches or 2 planes? What would these objects do for me and for the world? I was hungry and I had to work in the field. I survived hard times, played football barefooted. I did not have an education and many other things. But today, with what I win thanks to football, I can help my people. I built schools, a stadium, we provide clothes, shoes, food for people in extreme poverty. In addition, I give 70 euros per month to all people in a very poor region of Senegal, his home country, which contributes to their family economy. I do not need to display luxury cars, luxury homes, trips and even planes. I prefer that my people receive a little of what life has given me. Televangelists, are you listening? God bless you. Feel free to support Podbean, the podcast rather, on the Podbean fundraiser. And keep the information flowing in, and we shall see you again next week.